Okay, and welcome back. This has been a very historic week in terms of covering the situation in South Africa. We have spent, of course, on this program many, many years clearly and unequivocally stating the reality of suffering and death in terms of white and coloreds in South Africa at the hands of the ANC black government. It's a very difficult situation. The idea of farm family murders is an idea that is really, it's a minimalist statement when it comes to understanding what really goes on in these horrific crimes, which I think I started trying to figure it out the other night. I think it was about 18, 19 years ago I began covering the horrors in South Africa. And back then I was calling for a bridge, in quotes, to be built to allow all South Africans who wanted to leave, who needed to leave, to get the hell out of there. And nothing was ever done. We've never had one single American congressman or woman even introduce a bill, knowing full well it wouldn't get out of committee, introduce a bill declaring the plight of whites, especially in South Africa, who are clearly earmarked for genocide, as to be something that Americans should be concerned about and should work toward preventing. Never happened. Nothing. Not a word from Trump, not a word from the administration, nothing. So what we're going to do this hour is talk with, once again, Karen Smith, who has been with us for many, many visits now, about the situation in South Africa in terms of the pending plan to launch a complete confiscation of white-owned property with no compensation. And then probably that would start the beginning of the genocide. There's a cleansing coming. Everybody knows it down there now. It's not a secret. Karen, welcome back. How are you?
I'm beyond exhausted, Jeff, but very honored, as always, to be here. It's been a momentous week, and I thought it would be a good way to wrap it up with my good friend Ken Givenden, because Ken has been following the story for a very long time as well, and he has a unique perspective on how it affects Americans and the rest of the world. So I thought after the whole story this week about how it's affecting South Africa,
right,
it would be a good way to explain why Americans should be paying attention and how it's affected them.
Very good. That's a very important angle. Something that I've tried to do in my own way over the years, and I know our listeners understand what's going on down there, and site visitors do. But with that, let's say hello to Ken Givenden. Are you there, Ken?
Jeff, I'm here. Karen, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Ken. Thank you very, very much for doing this tonight, because, as I've told you many times, you have a unique perspective on things, which is so sensible and explains it clearly, so anybody can understand it.
Ken, where do you live? I don't need the address. Where do you live in the country, though?
Okay, you're talking to me. I live in Indiana.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so you're a Midwesterner. You also, as I understand from Karen, figured it out when you were 14. You got the big picture. How did that happen?
Well, I think, Jeff, I think part of it was just experience. When I was 14 years old, I got red-pilled. That's before the term, you know, even existed. We're talking 1969?
Yeah.
And I walked onto the campus of a high school, which was a majority black high school.
Mm-hmm.
And reality just simply was what reality was. There was no classroom that said, this is truth. It was just facing, confronting reality. And Whoa. The intense violence that we had to encounter. And
yeah.
I'm just imagining what it would be like to live in an entire country like that.
Oh, God. This is 1969. Okay. Tell me what it was like to walk on to a mostly black high school then. What was the sense of it? The looks you got, the comments you might have gotten? I'm very curious about that, because that goes back the 1960s. That was supposedly the flower children and all of that. And we were getting into Vietnam worse, and certainly black and white served together with great heroism and valor in Vietnam. What was it like, though, on a high school day back then for you?
Well, the first day on campus, I got punched in the head.
How so? What were the circumstances? Just somebody pushed you, gave you a shove?
Nah, there was, I wasn't familiar with being around black students, but I had a friend with me who was older. He was like a sophomore. He was experienced, you know. And one thing they said is you just stay away from black kids. And I said, come on, they're just people. So I got close to some black kids. One of them came up and punched me in the head. Just that simple, knocked me to the ground. And that was my initiation. Welcome to majority black high school. And my friend responded, Jeff, by unleashing a tirade of profanities as loud as he could. Next thing I knew, a faculty member came rushing out of the building, and this black kid took off, and the crowd of black kids who stood around laughed. And that was my initiation to black high school. And what I learned from that point going forward is white kids do not use the restroom when you're at school, because if you do, you get attacked. And this was persistent, constant. This is how it was day after day after day, week in and week out, except when you go into the classroom. Then everything inverts. Totally different, totally diverts it. We are told that white people are racist and black people are our victims.
Who was
So as soon as
telling
you
you
walk out
that?
of the class,
Who was
who
telling you
said
that
that?
in the classroom?
Teachers.
The
Yeah, that's
teachers.
what. Yeah, that's what they taught us.
Were these white
And
teachers or black teachers?
I think the entire time I was in high school, I had one black teacher. That was a math teacher.
Wow. So this was the
So if you
understood message to deliver to the majority black and the minority white, that white people are the problem. They're the racists.
Yeah, but you know, it wasn't just taught in school. It was taught in the media, taught everywhere. That was just the milieu. That was the socially accepted thing that everybody had to adhere to was that white people are, well, to put it in Marxist terms, white people are the bourgeois and black people are the proletariat. We are the oppressors, they are the oppressed. Now, something that's kind of interesting, Jeff, is the school that I attended was set up like a college campus. It wasn't like you walk into a building and you're a school. You when you go from class to class, you go outside one building, go into another. And the reason for that is the school was actually originally built during the Civil War as a arsenal for the Union Army. So every day you walk on campus, you're reminded of the Civil War and the conflict between North and South, and consequently slavery, so on, and our nation's history. But all of that is clouded by the coarse reality that white kids, everybody knew instinctively you had to stay away from the black kids because if you got close to them, they'd hit you. And interestingly, they hit each other. But it was extraordinarily,
Well,
extremely mild.
now they shoot each other, so.
Now they shoot each other. They probably would have done that then too if they had guns. But that was the red pill. And of course, you know, there are always some good black kids who saw through it as well, and they were they thought it was detestable, deplorable. But by and large, that was what we were immersed in. And so I grew up in an urban area. I learned from an early age that there is a distinction. We don't like to admit it, but it's there. And then, you know, to tie this into South Africa, as I'm imagining what the people there must be going through living in an entire nation, not a high school campus where you can just get up and walk off and go back home, but they're immersed in that 24/7 everywhere they go. And I was talking to a South African. It may have been Karen that told me this. I can't remember, but they said something to the effect that white South Africans live indoors. You know, you go from your home to the grocery store, stay in your car. You just stay inside somewhere all the time because you have to be protected. Now, another interesting anecdote. Last week, I bought a car. Well, actually, I bought it for my wife because her car wore out.
Well, that was
So
nice of you. Nice guy. That's good.
we were in the showroom, and the salesman came up, and man, the guy had an accent. I said, "You're not British." He said, "No, I'm South African. Here on a green card, got married." And I asked him, I knew the answer, but I said, "What brought you to the United States?" And he said, "Violence." The reason he got out of South Africa is because of the violence. And by the way, one more quick anecdote just to throw this in, a bit of trivia. Do you happen to know what is the whitest city in the state of California?
Yeah, I have to
Probably
think
don't.
about that. I'd have to th You
Answer is.
talking about big cities or any city?
Well, any city. The answer is Malibu.
All right.
where all the white liberals live.
Right,
I mean, these
right.
people live in an isolated, insulated
Right.
white ghetto while they preach to the rest of us that we have to be integrated. Well, they're the most segregated people, in California.
Well, hypocrisy and left-wing liberals, the synonyms.
Yeah, there's no distinction. To say that you're a liberal is to say you're a hypocrite. The way that I like to say that, Jeff, is if liberals were logical, they wouldn't be liberals.
Oh,
You have to be irrational to
you're
be a liberal.
right. You're right. You've got to have a screw loose, or you've got to be irrational, or you have to be following an agenda. This is no other way. Logical linear thought does not play a role in liberalism. It never has.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned about brainwashing and thought reform, just kind of a passion of mine to study that. But the way that you deprogram somebody, whether they're immersed in political correctness or a religious cult that's dangerous or any other school of thought that is abnormal, what you do, it's really kind of simple. What you do is you simply expose that person's brain, their mind, to reality. It's just that simple. And what that does is it forces their thinking process to compare reality with what they believe. And they have to do now one of two things. They have to turn into an apologist and try to explain why they believe something stupid, or they have to confront reality. And if you do it in the right way, it's kind of like pizza. I like pizza. Somebody forces it down my throat, I'm still going to reject it. But if you present truth in the right way, people will accept it and they'll change their minds.
Well, they're not going to get truth through the mainstream media. That's another problem. So you're up against a massive obstacle right away. You can
Yeah,
present
that's
it
why.
to them. Now, are you talking about, how are you talking about exposing somebody to reality? What would your tools be? What's your approach?
Well, for example, that, by the way, is why they hate the internet. It's why they want to shut us down, is because we are bypassing their thought control. Now, by the way, just to answer your question, there was a book, I've talked to Karen about this a couple times. It's by Robert J. Lifton. Not sure if you know him or not, psychologist who studied brainwashing in communist China back in the 50s. This guy's like in his 90s, older than Hugh Hefner, But he wrote a book called Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism. He wrote the book back, what, I think 1960, 1961. This guy's not a conservative, by the way. But he did study the brainwashing techniques of the communist. And what he learned was this: when somebody had a strong sense of identity, for example, they would take Catholic missionaries, put them in prison, try to brainwash them. Those people, they were very difficult to brainwash because they understood who they were. They had a sense of identity. They knew that communism was wrong, but if somebody doesn't have a sense of identity, that person, their brain is very malleable. That's somebody that you can convince. So, to answer your question, the way you present it is, well, for example, on my website, I just did a video just quoting statistics from the Department of Justice. Just that simple. They can't deny the statistics. Now, you don't. I don't think it's wise to once again use the analogy of shoving it down their throat, but just present it. And, I think it was Sam Harris that said, nobody, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said here, but nobody admits they're wrong in public. So you don't demand they change their mind. You just, here's the facts, and eventually they will come around. They may not change their mind today, but they're going to stop and think about it. Just give them time. But I think that answers your question. Just put the information out there. But
Well,
one of the
that's
things
what
that,
we try to do here, and it's becoming a the internet was always a little difficult for people. Now it's hugely difficult for a lot of people to walk into the internet without guidance and find their way. There are a million distractions and a million lies and a million deceits to try to weed your way through. It's difficult. So to help somebody with a list, say, of four or five websites that you can trust, you can go here and you can get the real deal. Give them a list. Make a list of 10 of your favorite YouTube videos that you can email to somebody. Five. Make it five. Look at these five videos and then let's talk. Right that you see a video, write down the URL. Keep a little list, keep a little tab, keep it saved in your mail file, wherever it may be, and then just send it to your friends. Here, I've seen these. I would love to know what you have to say about them. Ask them, put it on them, and they'll come back and tell you what they think. People like to be consulted for their opinion. Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's fine, but people don't like to be told they're wrong.
Oh, no, of course not.
You can't
tell them they're wrong. That's why I suggest say, all right, look, I'm going to send you five videos that really bother me. They confuse me. I can't figure them out, and I would love to know what you think of them.
Yeah, what do you think?
That's how you get them to look at them.
Exactly. In his studies on thought reform, he actually listed, and keep in mind, this is back in the 1950s that he was writing this, published it in 1960-61. Mm-hmm. And he listed the eight components of thought reform. And these are exactly, Jeff, the things that the cultural Marxists are using today to change our minds. And one of those things is what he calls milieu control, or the social environment. So if you can control what is cool and what is hip and what is socially accepted, mm-hmm. that is a key component to controlling people. Now, here's what he tells us in his book, and I think this is phenomenally interesting. When they would take Westerners and put them in prison in China to brainwash them, the first thing they would do is they would make their life extremely uncomfortable. Put them in chains, pain, not let them sleep, mm-hmm. make them stand up, don't give them access to restrooms, so forth, so on. And Jeff, what they would say is, you need to confess to, then fill in the blank. The first reaction of the prisoner was to reject it. I'm not going to confess because I didn't do anything. Finally, it occurs to them, okay, I'll confess. They'll take the chains off. And that's what happened. They would confess and the chains would come off. But not for long. They would say, no, your confession wasn't good enough. And so they put them back in chains, make their life uncomfortable again. Mm-hmm. They would go through this process for a period sometimes of 3 years over and over and over again. Hmm. And what Dr. Lifton teaches is the reason they do that, they really didn't want you to confess. But what they understood was that if you can get somebody to confess over and over and over again, eventually they will come to believe their confessions. And that's what happened.
That's right. That's right.
Now, the reason I say that is we are told that we have this thing called white privilege. We're supposed to confess and name our white privileges. That's a brainwashing technique that Dr. Lifton was talking about. If we confess over and over and over again, eventually we're going to come to the point where we actually believe that we have a problem with white privilege. If we keep confessing the evils of America, you know, or the so-called slavery era, eventually, we're going to come to believe that there's something evil about us. Now, let me use this illustration. By the way, I'm kind of rambling on here, so feel free to interrupt me. But what if, Jeff, say a year ago, somebody began video recording your life? I mean, every second of every day, nonstop for a solid year.
I think the CIA and the NSA are already doing that, but...
I'll be doing it. But at the end of the year, they're going to make a documentary about Jeff Rentz.
Uh-oh.
However, what they do is they delete everything good that you did, and they keep on. They're going to make 1 hour video, mm-hmm. a 1 hour documentary. And that 1 hour documentary is going to be only the worst things you ever did. You know, when you got mad in traffic, when you cussed, you know, all the bad things, that is the 1 hour video. And somebody watches that video, that documentary, and they're going to say, geez, Jeff Rentz is a horrible person. That's what cultural Marxism is doing to American history. They're taking out the very, 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 very worst things, and that's mm-hmm. the narrative they're creating. Mm-hmm. They're leaving everything else
out.
Oh,
of course. Out of sight, out of mind. Nobody hears it. You bet. You know, it's a very good statement, good overview. Good connectivity. That's what's happening. And the mainstream media is only too happy to go along with that agenda. Karen, step in here, and we're going to go to South Africa here pretty soon, but let us know your thoughts. Go ahead.
To extrapolate that to South Africa, if you look at the black people, they're being told by the government, by their teachers, by everybody, that the whites stole their land. So over and over and over and over and over, day and night, by the media, by everybody around them. They're being told this. So they firmly believe it, not having too much education. And as Ken is so keen on the statistic of the thing, they have an IQ, a proven IQ of under 70. So it is easier to brainwash those kind of people. And then you put the white children in the school with those children. Now, the children have got unformed minds, and they are told the same thing over and over and over and over again every day.
Right.
Then it makes perfect sense to me that these white children are standing up with Black Lives Matter here in the USA and Black Line First and the EFF in South Africa, because they don't have thoughts of their own. That is the only thought that has been rammed into their heads. It kind of puts the whole picture in a different light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What Ken said earlier about whites in South Africa, and Karen, you can back this up, they literally live in their barred windows, homes, and they don't go out except under extreme circumstances in many cases. They've got to be careful. They don't go out after dark. They live in, we won't call them gated communities, but they have extremely high security homes, the best that they can afford. And many, of course, can't afford anything. Hundreds of thousands of whites are living in the ghetto, in the streets, in ramshackle huts.
A million.
It's a million now, huh? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, those people need to be taken out of South Africa and brought here, or move to another location in South Africa, which hopefully will happen. But this cannot be allowed to continue. It is wrong. And I don't care what color the skin of these people is. They shouldn't be in this situation. It's just despicable. Hold on a minute. We'll come right back with Karen and Ken as we continue. This has been quite a week about South Africa, and I hope you've been able to listen and enjoy it. Back after this. You know, when you think about the mainstream media, I don't recall having seen a story or heard a story about the South African farm massacres, slaughters, genocidal murders in a long, long time. And I honestly can't say that I've ever heard a major mainstream outlet talk about them. It is one of the best-kept secrets anywhere. And I guess the ANC thug regime, the communist regime down there, Karen, is very well versed in how to keep this stuff quiet. They've got excellent money, do whatever they want, hire the best people. Somehow they've scrubbed this, and it's just not making any news. You still there, Karen? Oop.
Jeff, it's very easy for them. Sorry, I muted my mic.
Start over again, Karen.
It's very easy for them because the South African Broadcasting Corporation, which runs all the TV shows in South Africa and the radio shows mainly, is a government organization. So what the ANC did is they made it practically illegal to report on murders or farm murders or any of those things. So you might find a little paragraph in a local newspaper where the farmer was killed because he's known in that area. But in general, no, they will not report on it. And you were saying that slaughter is imminent. So there's a relatively new group in South Africa called Black Land First, run by Ndili Maximali, who is not a South African. He's a Tanzanian, I think. And he has got this group of people behind him, very, very violent people. They would equate to your Black Lives Matter people here. And they have said that if the government does not speed up this land reclamation, they are going to come from the 31st of December. And they're going to take the land by any means necessary. Now, they are very vocal, involved in riots and protests and all kinds of things like that. And although they do not have open ties to the Economic Freedom Front of Malema, I think that they have a lot in common and are probably joining forces. So that they have said the 31st of December is the date, and I actually believe them, because if you look on any social media, their members are posting quite openly pictures of themselves with firearms and saying, "We are coming for you," which of course is perfectly okay on Facebook. If
Oh
you're
yes,
a
oh
conservative
absolutely.
person.
That scum, that dirtbag, Zuckerberg, that fraud, that hypocrite. Yeah.
Yes. You know, if you post anything conservative Christian, it disappears within 5 minutes, and you'll get blocked and get a timeout and go to Facebook jail and all of these kind of things that they do to you. But
Huh.
these black
Wait,
people,
what do they, wait, I don't do Facebook. What do they do?
if they don't, if people complain about your articles,
Right.
then they send you to Facebook jail. Now, depending on how severe it is what you've done, you can get a timeout for 3 days, in which time you can sign into your account, but you cannot share anything or post articles up
A
to a month.
timeout like a child would get.
Yes, or you can go to Facebook jail, which is not what they call it, but you can be denied access to Facebook for 3 months or more, or be thrown off altogether.
My God, the withdrawals might be fatal for some.
Well, you know, Jeff, and my husband and I both, we refused. We refused to have anything to do with Facebook. And
I have nothing to do with it. Yeah.
then I started doing this radio thing. And it is the quickest and easiest way to get the word out. And also the quickest and easiest way to read up on things during the day so that you're on top of it. Instead of going through 100 sites, you go to Facebook. But man, if I didn't do the radio and TV thing, I wouldn't have Facebook at all. It's a pain in the butt. But anyway, they have many ways of stopping your things being visible on Facebook.
Interesting.
But as I say, you can complain about these black people making the most horrific threats right there on social media. And they just get told that they have not violated Facebook standards. So they're allowed to stay. We take screenshots of them, and there is an organization in South Africa that takes them to the Human Rights Court. Of course, not a very much happens about it, but at least we're trying.
Wow. All right. Ken, your statement about love and respect for Facebook.
One of the tricks I've learned with Facebook, by the way, there is a value to Facebook. For example, that's how I met Karen Smith, is through Facebook.
Ah,
And
there you go.
there are hundreds of people that I've
Right.
connected with using that media.
Well, you're smart enough to use Facebook. You don't let Facebook use you. I get it.
Yeah, well, the trick is this. Every week or so, you go back and you purge all the comments that you made prior to that. And the reason is what the trolls will do, and I honestly believe there's probably an army of people who do nothing but attack us on Facebook. Could be one guy with many different
Oh,
profiles,
I
but you
agree.
know, it's
I
like.
absolutely, sure.
But what they will do is they will go back as far as a year and find some post that nobody has read in months, and they will flag that one. I call this process flag bombing, where you have a lot of people flag the same post. And again, it could be one guy with a lot of different profiles, but on the Facebook end, it looks like a lot of people. So what they do is then they do what Karen calls they put you in Facebook jail, or they will take down your account for a period of days. You know, I don't know how many times I've been kicked off Facebook. I mean, I just lost track until I learned this little trick is you start taking down your old post, which most people don't read anyhow. And that's kind of protective. And by the way, I've been kicked off YouTube 5 times for the same reason. This last stint, I think I've been on now for a couple of years because I finally got a hold of somebody at YouTube who said, "Wait a minute, you're not a racist. You know, you're just being honest here." And they put me up and kept me up for a considerable period of time now.
Right.
But that goes back to what we're talking about before, is the person who controls the flow of information controls our thinking. What we read in the Bible is faith comes by hearing. Well, what are you hearing? What are you listening to? Well, that forms your belief system. And if all you're hearing is the nonsense from the cultural Marxist media,
Right.
that's what you're going to believe. And yeah, that's why they're trying to kick us off, is because they want to control the conversation. And when they don't control the conversation, what do liberals do, Jeff? Well, they chant. You know, they scream. They can't be logical. They can't be reasonable because it's so obvious that they're wrong. But the point of all that is, yeah, Facebook has a value. It allows us to connect with I don't know how many people I know. Probably hundreds that I wouldn't even know they existed had it not been for Facebook. So there is a value to it, but you got to use it wisely.
All right. Well, when you look at Facebook overall, do you see it as a plus or a minus for the masses?
You're asking me or Karen?
Ken.
Yeah, I see it as a plus, but it does have problems.
All right. Well, that would require the people using it, again, to use it and not be used by it. That's
exactly,
the problem.
Yeah.
Karen, this is only going to get to be more powerful, more indeed influential over people's lives from a very early age on. It's just the way it is.
I think it's terrible, Jeff, because people no longer talk to each other. I've watched them in restaurants. I've watched them in traveling in the cars. Their eyes are on that phone nonstop. They come to visit. They're on their phone.
Right.
Nonstop.
It's the most addictive thing I've ever seen in my life. Mass addiction. Never seen anything like it.
It is a terrible thing because human contact is being lost. And, you know, you were talking about South Africans being prisoners in their homes. So that reputation that South Africans had for being warm and generous and hospitable is being lost because they're being imprisoned in their own homes. And I just think that our youth is being imprisoned in these damn cell phones because they never look up from them.
Never. I've seen it. It's frightening. They are mesmerized. Yeah. They are under the control of a digital, unseen wizard. And just don't know. Not good.
George Orwell wrote about that in 1984. He said they will not look up from their devices.
I'd like to see that quote. If you run across it, let me know. Yeah, that's interesting. George knew they will not look up from their devices. That's a paraphrase, direct quote. Interesting.
I will send you the quotes from that book that most apply to people today. I've got four or five of them. And that one is the one that actually frightened me because when he wrote, we didn't have those things.
No.
And yet he saw it happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's around you everywhere, and it scares me because families don't talk anymore. They don't ask each other, how was your day? They don't sit around the dining room table and converse. So we're becoming strangers to each other. And it's a very frightening world because those things start at home.
Right.
And if you don't socialize at home, I wonder what you become as an adult. It frightens me.
Yeah. How does Facebook work in South Africa? Is it fully allowed there? Is it restricted? Does the SA regime, the communist thug regime, use it in some way that you've noticed? I'm curious.
I don't know if you've read about the state capture recently by the Guptas, an Indian family in South Africa, who have, by wealth, bought the government, literally, and all the...
No, say that again, Karen, please. I didn't understand that. Sorry.
Okay. There's an Indian family called the Guptas.
Uh-huh. Gupta. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And they came to South Africa about the same time as Nelson Mandela. They were friends with him. Mm-hmm. So when he came out of prison, this started. And only recently, due to the intervention of a British public relations firm called Bell Pottinger, has the Guptas' involvement in the state in South Africa become known. Now, had we not had Facebook, we could not have communicated as quickly with each other about this, and it would not have been as widely known to the South African people as it is, because the media don't report on it.
Mm-hmm.
So these people, this Indian family has literally bought and paid for the government in South Africa. They have their fingers in the revenue services. They
Wow.
have their fingers in Eskom, which is the electricity supply. They have their fingers in South African Airways. In fact, I saw today that the plan for South African Airways was to run it down to worth nothing, which they've just about done, and then sell it
Oh,
to the
sure.
Gupta.
Of course. Yeah.
You
They'll
know,
buy it at 5 cents on the dollar or whatever the
yes,
rand is. Yeah.
exactly. So the biggest scandal in South Africa right now, which has hit Britain, and fortunately is being heard about all over the world because these companies, Bell Pottinger and KPMG, are worldwide companies. And they are involved in this scandal because they signed up to help the Guptas to maintain a better image in the press. And behind the Guptas came the Zuma family. So they were paying £100,000 a month to this company to increase their image in the world. And this company came out and they were the ones who developed the statement of white monopoly capital, which is the buzzword amongst the blacks in South Africa right now.
That's
We
what
have
they
to
don't want to lose. I got it. Yeah.
No, but we have to get rid of it, you understand?
Yeah.
But we won't go. So this white monopoly capital is now the rallying point for killing whites and for taking away their property and for taking away 70% of their businesses, etc.
Wow.
Anyway, this company developed this statement, and they then got bots. Now, this is where Facebook and everywhere comes in. They had thousands and thousands of bots that were looking for anywhere on the web where the Guptas and Zuma were mentioned, and then going in and commenting either in favor of or against whatever was best at that time. So I saw this on some of the videos you've done. I'm sure those are not people commenting. Those are the bots that have been sent in to make you look bad.
Got it. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Sure.
But that is the biggest scandal in South Africa right now. Bell Pottinger is going to close down, and it's a huge UK company. And they are closing their doors because of this. And KPMG has fired all their top executives in South Africa because of it. That's all a pointing fingers blame game thing. And of course, Zuma's under fire again. And the public prosecutor is covering his backside for him one more time, apart from all the 783 criminal offences that he's got charges against him for that have been swept under the rug, including fraud and rape. You know, this is now going to trying to be swept under the rug, but the world is at least looking at South Africa, and that is largely due to social media.
Well, I think that our programs this week have certainly had to have been a major topic of conversation on Facebook down there, as much as it would be allowed to be. Are you hearing anything about that? Yes.
Jeff, the uproar on Facebook is enormous. There are three camps. One all for this thing because it is a real thing and it's the only way for South Africa to go. I can't see any other way. But one all for it, one against it, and then the others saying they're never going to bow down to an other color king. So there is a massive uproar
So
on.
we have been heard.
You have put the cat amongst the pigeons, let me tell you.
Very good. Very nice. Good. Well, this hopefully will keep it up, and this will be used to stave off the pending crisis. Maybe we can get these thugs to back down, or at least pause in their onslaught against whites and coloreds in South Africa. This would be good. Well, I'm very glad to hear that. Ken,
Well,
let's get a. Sorry, Karen, go ahead.
Ken has been doing this for a very long time in his own unique way, shining a light on this and relating it back to what is going on in Europe and America,
Very
for which
good.
I'm very grateful to both of you for that.
Well, Ken, let's get a final comment from you tonight. Thank you for being here and sharing what you have. This is all about trying to save lives and keep South Africa from just exploding in death and violence.
One of the things I always encourage people to do over and over and over again, every time I have the opportunity, is I encourage them to go to Google and just type in the words South Africa farm murders.
Right.
But then click on images.
Right. Oh, I know.
Talk about red pill, that will open your eyes.
That does it. No, that's exactly right. What a horrible, horrible thing to behold, to see, but it's reality. And we've got to have people looking at it. The farm murders have got to stop. This whole thing has to be changed. And perhaps this week has begun something that will resolve this problem. Maybe once and for all. It's time. It's time. Too many people have suffered for too long.
Jeff, did you know that the Koi Nation had suffered so badly?
I didn't until this week. No,
it's just horrible. I'm ashamed of myself.
The hundreds and hundreds of years of abuse, just incredible what these people have been through. What special people to have withstood that and to continue to this day to not have harbored tremendous resent and hate for what's happened to them. They want to move forward. This is an extraordinary people.
Jeff, the king and the advisor, his legal advisor, are amazing people. Such gentle, kind people.
Well, Professor Nagin was on last night, and we certainly heard that.
And did he not make it clear to the entire world that they have an absolutely international legal right to do what they
Correct.
Are doing?
No question. Not even arguable. Completely inarguable. He did. That was a remarkable program. Ken, a final comment from you very quickly.
Well, just to note, Kieran mentioned white monopoly capital. When you stop and think about it, since the end of apartheid, it's not just been the white people who are suffering, but it's also the black people who are suffering because of the loss of white monopoly capital. So stop and think what South Africa would be like today if there were no white people, if there was no white capital. These people, everybody wants to go to South Africa because of the white influence. And let me just say this very quickly, something else that I repeat frequently. But if you take a bunch of white people and you plop them down any place on the planet, whether it's North America or South Africa or Australia or Iceland, what they will do is they will create wealth. There's something innately, genetically pre-engineered about white people that we create wealth. And that enhances the lives of everybody else. To get rid of white monopoly capital in South Africa, it would be, well, it's killing the goose that lays the golden egg. It would be devastating for the black population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Thank you, Ken, very much. We'll talk to you again down the road as these remarkable developments continue to pick up momentum and notice around the world. Karen, thank you very much. A final comment from you tonight.
Jeff, it looks to the world as if nothing is happening, as if this announcement was made and nothing is happening. But as the professor explained last night, there's an incredible amount of legal work going on in the background. So the wheels are turning. Things are happening. It is not just a flash in the pan.
And our programs did make an impact on Facebook again.
An enormous difference, Jeff.
Wow, wonderful. Very
thank
good.
You so much.
You're welcome, Karen. Thank you. And Ken, thank you again. Take care.
Good night.
Good night. All right. That's our program this evening. We shall be back tomorrow night in 21 hours. Thank you for being here, wherever you are around the world. And we'll talk soon.